gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteeFoods.com.
Welcome to The Zone, Sports Radio 810 WHB. No, I'm not Jason Anderson. Sounds similar, right? Not really.
Close enough, right?
Jason's out today. Don't know where he's at. We need to find him. I'm kidding. I know where he's at. He's doing things with his kid. He's being a responsible adult. He's being a dad. So while he's doing responsible stuff, the kids have taken over the show. I'm Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We don't have a guardian in the studio with us, so we can do what we want.
No babysitter.
No babysitter. I will drink so many cups of coffee, and no one can stop me. Dylan already does that. We'll have a fun show today. Jack Johnson with us. Matt Derrick will join us at 11 o'clock. We'll talk Chiefs. I'm going to do a little live mock draft with him. I know he did a lot on ChiefsDigest.com. We'll go through that with him, but I also want to go and do a live one. I think it's kind of fun. I'm not a big mock draft guy. So this is going to be my, I think, first mock draft that I have personally done.
Really?
Yeah, I don't do it a lot because...
You don't do that pro football focus, this draft simulator, just for fun, just to see what you grade out as?
Every once in a while, because I think I may have done one very early on this year, but it wasn't a super serious one. Now I've done a lot more research and dove in a little deeper now. I don't because... There's going to be so many moving parts that we have no idea what's going to happen. So while I sit here and go, oh my gosh, I can't wait to draft A.D. Mitchell in this particular draft at 32, odds are I'm going to be drafting a guy who I'm like, oh dude, I do not want that guy at 32.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things with drafting at 32. It's not, I'll never trade it for anything else. It's not as fun anymore, right? You're not worrying about a top 10 pick. There are 50 different guys that could be available at 32. So I do like one. If Adonai Mitchell is available, I'm like, okay, cool. This would be a great feeling. Or Ladd McConkey, who you
Ladd's
talked
to. Ladd's my guy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that'd be a great pick. And then we're going to get to draft night. We've done all these mock drafts. All these picks have happened. And they're probably going to trade out.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. And so I get so... I don't get enamored with it as the majority of people do. I think that's what it comes down to. I think it's a fun tool, but I think fun may be where I land more than I'm going to glean a lot of resources from this. But I am going to do it because, again, I think it's fun, and I want to do it at least one time. And I think on air, when that way I don't have time to make long decisions. I'm on the clock, baby. I'll be on the clock, and I don't take long, okay? I rush through these bad boys. I don't like to wait. It's like my golf game.
You're not going up to the buzzer.
No. I am not going to... Like, my pet peeve. Jacksonville, we all knew you were drafting Trevor Lawrence. Why did you have to wait the entire time? You had months. You had the entire season. You were asked. We knew what you were doing.
Do you think anybody in that war room, like, last minute was like, but what if we...
But what if we didn't?
But what if we didn't do this? Just to start some chaos here.
Yeah.
It's like that terrible movie Draft Day where all just... unrealistic stuff happens. I'd be that guy in the war room. Like, last minute, you've already written it down on the card, handed. Well, one more thing here.
What if... Devil's advocate here.
Devil's
advocate. What if we didn't? So Matt Derrick will join us at 11 o'clock. We'll play my Julian Edelman interview as well as Ladd McConkey interview. Around 12:20, interviewed Julian the other day. Actually, yesterday. It was fun. Got a lot of information from him as far as similarities and differences between the Patriots dynasty and the Kansas City Chiefs dynasty. He actually was very glowing about Kansas City, which I thought was kind of nice from a guy who, again, made my childhood hell, right? I thought that was kind of fun. Got his thoughts on Mahomes as well as when he played Kansas City. I don't know if you guys remember this. In 2011, he played defense. 2011, his third year in the NFL, They were decimated defensively. No more corners and defensive backs. So he had to play dime package corner against Jamal Charles. So I talked to him about that, and I think he was very entertained by the fact that, you know, he ain't talking about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. He's talking about playing defense against Jamal Charles. We will be going to the Chiefs presser in just a moment. Dylan is back there working diligently on getting everything set up, so we will play the Chiefs presser in just a moment. But Ladd McConkey and Julian Edelman around 12:20. Then Mick Schaefer joins at 1. So I guess we will have an adult, but let's be real. Is Mick considered an adult, or is he just a... is he one of us? Is he one of the youth?
I'd imagine when he's rocking the attire, the Oklahoma State stuff, yeah. I mean, he blends in with us. Now, I've never been in the studio with Mick at the same time, so you would have a much better grasp than I do. I only see the attire, the style when he walks in, so I think he's one of us.
More like Pete Davidson, right? Where it's like, yeah. he might be older, but he's the voice of the youth.
Or Steve Buscemi, how do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah, there you go. How do you do, fellow kids? Yeah. All right, before we get to the Chiefs presser, Dylan's going to let me know on that one. Some Royals news. Nick Lofton was optioned to Omaha, to AAA. There's going to be a corresponding move announced today. I think we all assume it's going to be Michael Massey, right? I don't think there's any question that it's going to be Michael Massey. We're going right now to the Chiefs press. We'll talk about that after the break.
Ball in place for that to, you know, to see an outcome like that. But I always think anything's possible.
We'll go next to Sam McDowell.
Hey, Brett. Couple things for you. Just wondering, without asking you to reveal your draft board, just what you think overall of the wide receiver class.
I think it's one of the deeper classes. I think the good thing about the wide receiver position, and this is typically every year, is they provide depth really 1 through 5, and there's always pockets of players. I think there's a large group of receivers in the first 50 picks, I think, that we have great grades on. And then I think there's another pocket right behind that. I think that is a positive. I think, you know, corner, there's some depth, you know, middle to later on in the draft. O-lineman, as I mentioned in the opener, it's really good early. And so there'll be a late run on those guys, but it tails off a little bit. I think it's a better defensive line class than we've seen in the past. I think there's some good mid-round depth there. Linebacker running back's probably a little lighter than years past. So I think O-line, receivers, corners are good hot spots throughout the draft, and that's a good thing because we can use one of each of those.
And then just based on how last year unfolded, particularly the back end of the draft, you know, I know there were at least a couple teams that weren't excited to deal with you. What's this last week like as far as setting up the potential, if there are guys that maybe you would want to trade up for as the draft unfolds?
Well, we'll see. Typically, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday right before the draft is when the teams do all their call checks, make sure the phone numbers are working for the teams. So we'll get an email list of draft day phone numbers. So we typically do a run through and check with all the teams. And once we do that, it usually kind of spins into just some casual dialogue, hypothetically. And, you know, if you were looking to move up or move back, those type of scenarios. So I think we'll do a good job again out in front of this and talking to some teams and, seeing where their mind is in regards to value of or their boards or what boards they're working on. A large part of this is just making sure we're all on the same page in regards to what draft boards you're working from, because as you know, Sam, there's tons of boards. Each team has their own boards and in a combination of other teams' boards with historical boards they use. So we typically reach out to those teams early in the week, make sure the phones are working and exchange some ideas and usually just make sure we're all on the same page in regards to what boards we're working off of.
We'll go next to Sarin Petro.
I'll have a follow-up, Sydney, if I could. Brett, in light of what's going on with Rashee Rice, does that make you have to, you know, put some guys like Tavondre Sweat, who got a DWI in the last week or so, do you have to push those guys off your board more now because of what you're dealing with currently?
Yeah, I think, we spend a great deal of time on all these players. And, you know, I think we have to look at each individual case independently and just work through it. And, you know, I think maybe subconsciously, maybe it factors a little, but I think that when we stick to our process and, you know, trust the guys that we have around us, I mean, we have a great coaching staff, we have a great personnel staff, we have, you know, a great security team. So we really lean on those guys. And, you know, at the end of the day, I trust the people around me, and, you know, they spend a lot of time working on the player and his ability to come in here and be a big, good person, be a good teammate. And so I think, you know, we try to stick to, you know, what we've done in the past. And I mean, there'll always be some things that factor into ultimately what we decide to do with a guy. But I think sticking to our process, and we've done this now for, you know, a little bit here, and it, over the long run, it's, you know, provided us a good blueprint to work off of.
And then kind of a follow up to what Sam had. Since you won the championship, do you find yourself like there aren't as many trade partners? Teams actively don't want to deal with you because they're afraid that they'll be helping the champ?
I think yes and no. I think that if a team, if it can benefit them, I think they're always going to pick up the phone and call and be willing to work. I don't think a team is going to, you know, diminish their ability to do something they really want to do just because it's the Chiefs. I do think, though, that the ability to deal with certain teams, I mean, it's always been understood that if you're going to deal with a team in your division, there's a little bit more of a premium. But I think just some of the AFC teams in general that are consistent playoff performers, I mean, the Buffaloes and the Cincinnati's and the Baltimore's, I mean, it's probably a little bit harder to deal with those teams. And even if they do pick up the phone, I think some of their asking prices are a tick higher. So I think we get hit with a little bit more interest, but I think that there's always a way to make a deal, but I think certain teams will probably up the price up a little bit.
We'll go ahead and wrap up with the last five hands that are up. So Blair, you're next.
Hey, Brett, I think you just touched on this a second ago, and I think we ask you this every year, but, the value of the visit, you know, whether it's at the combine or a pro day or whatever, what kind of information do you glean from that, and how helpful can it be?
Oh, it's extremely helpful. And I mean, when the guys come in here for the visit, I mean, they're here all day. I mean, they'll start in the training room. They'll go through another comprehensive MRI and meeting with Rick. And then from there, I mean, they get a chance to visit with all of our coaches. And at the combine, we do have a chance to spend some time with these kids, but I mean, it's maxed out at like 15 to 17 minutes. So you get a chance to get a brief intro, a little bit of an idea of their background, and you get into some football, but it's not very long. So I think just having the whole day and getting to know the person, understand the person more, talk through things, talk through football, talk through their upbringing, all that kind of stuff is extremely important to us. And, you know, typically we go through our system and guys, we either feel, you know, one way or the other, and guys that, you know, we're not interested in is one category. And then guys that we feel really good about, we know this guy, it's not going to do us any good. You know, we don't deal with those guys, but then you have a handful of guys that when you're at the combine, you felt like that 15 minutes just wasn't enough and you wanted some more information. And then there's another series of guys you bring in that didn't get invited to the combine. So you kind of like them to some degree, but you have no medical on them whatsoever. So those guys have to come in because there's just no medical on them. So it's a combination of different combinations of reasons of why we bring guys in, but they're super beneficial for us.
Let's go next to Jesse.
Hey, Sid, I'll have a follow-up too. Hey, Brett, I just wondered, with Rasheed's kind of unknown status right now, how, if at all, does that change or affect your guys' draft and who you might take?
Yeah, I don't know if it does, just because I think we have a lot of needs. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, you go into every draft. I mean, you can look at our roster, and I think short of quarterback, you know, maybe linebacker. But I think that there's needs on the offensive line for sure. I mean, you know, guard center depth, competition at left tackle, receiver, there's a need. Cornerback, we just lost Snead. We do have some good young guys. We do have Nazi Johnson coming back. But corners are hard to find. You know, we could probably throw safety in there too, because I think we really like Shamar Connor and Cook and Reed. So, I mean, look, I think that it's one of those scenarios where I think there's a lot of positions that would make sense for us. And again, you start at the O-line, D-line and receiver position, but, it's a long season and, you know, depth is super important to us. And also, you know, guys, contracts do run out and, you know, I think anytime you get a player that you think can come in here and challenge for a starting position right away, I think you go in that direction.
Yeah, you kind of let me do this one. You know, situations change every year. A couple of years ago, you guys had lots of draft capital, you know, go up and get Trent McDuffie. How likely do you think a trade up is this year, just given your overall depth and the draft capital that you have?
Yeah, it's just kind of, you know, weighing the options. And on one end, there's probably, you know, I think there's 16, 18 guys this year that we have as first round grades. You factor in some quarterbacks there. So, you know, and then some maybe some teams that go in different directions that are contradictory to what our board has. So you figure 16 to 18 names, four quarterbacks, maybe five quarterbacks. I mean, there could be a window there where we have an opportunity to get a guy, and then just weighing, you know, the cost, because if it is a corner or an O lineman or, you know, receiver, you know, we're probably going to give up the opportunity to draft that other position later in the draft. So is, you know, one guy that you have a first round grade on better than two guys that you maybe have second, third round grades on? It's just kind of weighing that formula for us. And, you know, I think that's where it comes down to just, you know, the value of that guy that falls. And if he's one of those guys that you really have as a top 10, top 12 pick, I think you up and do it. Like Trent McDuffie's situation, I think if it's one of those guys, I think we'll certainly be aggressive and hopefully we can find a trading partner. But I also think there's some depth in round two there. So, you know, I do think there's opportunities to add players that can come in and push for starting positions in rounds two and three as well.
Let's go next to Nick Jacobs.
And Sydney, I'll have a quick follow-up. Brett, for you, rough estimate-wise, do you know how many guys you have on your board?
I wrote that down. I knew someone was going to ask me that. Because I never know. I just see a bunch of names up there.
Right.
I don't, like, count them. I sort of just move them around, and I have them in like, pockets. And but I was walking in here. I said, someone's going to ask me exactly how many guys I have on the board. So it's 221, which is a lot. But you'd have to come in here and be with me one day to see how I process this, because – like I have guys in the sixth or seventh round on my board, but I always know that we'll never get to the sixth and seventh round. So the total number of boards, total number of players on the board, 221. But in my mind, there's kind of like a line right there. And those guys in six and seven, we keep on the board because that's where I want to work down on free agency. And so I know where I'm going. As soon as the draft's over, the guys that we had on the board at six and seven, again, we'll have plenty of numbers. We'll never get to them, but that's my free agency board. And that's kind of how we work through that.
And then my last question for you, each draft is unique, has a unique characteristic to it. Like 83, having the five quarterbacks in the first round. I know a couple of years ago, you thought there'd be a 1,000-yard rusher in the seventh round. For this draft class, what do you think it's going to be remembered for down the road?
Well, gosh, that's a good question. I'm not sure what it will be remembered for. I think it, you know, obviously it'll depend on how these, where these players go and how successful they are and what teams strategize to do different things. One interesting perspective that I did find kind of going through this is just the NIL effect. So, you know, typically when you're working through the fourth, fifth, sixth round, there's always interesting prospects and small school guys. And but I think it's, what you're starting to see is these fourth, fifth, sixth round prospects are a little older because they're staying. And some of these underclassmen that get third, fourth round grades, they have the opportunity to stay in school. And so I don't know if these drafts, and this will be a trend where they won't be as deep as they used to be. So, I mean, if you're a junior and you have a third or fourth round grade and you have an opportunity to stay in school and make money, you're going to go back, potentially stay in school. And so what happens is I think the drop off from rounds three, the cutoff line, I think the availability of young guys with potential that came out early, maybe they shouldn't, they would have stayed, they would have been a first or second round pick. Well, those guys are staying now. So I think the drop-off numbers are a little bit more extreme this year, and the players are a little bit older. So we have to work a little bit harder to find some young guys with upside that we really like. That, to me, I found challenging. And when we were going through the board, it was one of the things that I kind of like just instinctively thought. And then when I checked with our guys, they were like, yeah, these guys are a lot older. And but again, you know, when you have a ton of underclassmen that put their name in, decide to come out, that makes every draft deeper. When guys are staying in, it's going to make every draft a little tougher to work with on the back end.
Let's go to Adam Teicher.
Hey, good morning, Brett.
Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Good, good. Hey, Dorsey would be appalled at you for having 221 names on your board.
Yes, too many.
Yeah.
We don't use them all. We just have them up there just for for our free agency.
All right. I just wanted to get your expectations on a couple guys for this upcoming season, Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. What are your expectations for those guys for this year? And Sid, I'll have a second question as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, we obviously hoping both continue to improve, progress, and are able to be consistent playmakers for us. And you know, I know Kadarius has obviously had a long history of injury issues, but I mean, he is probably our most talented wideout. Now, again, it doesn't do anyone any good unless you stay healthy. But I mean, the kid has always worked hard here for us. And, you know, I know he's been down there with Pat, and I think it's just a matter of him staying healthy. And I think if he can do that, he can really do a lot of great things in this offense. And, you know, that's one of the things that there was a lot of speculation about KT, but I don't think that, you know, we ever stopped believing in him. And I think people around the building like him, and you know, it's the injury bug, and hopefully he gets some luck on his side and he can stay healthy and be the player that he was in Florida and the player that we've seen in spurts here. So just hoping he has a good off season and has a little luck on his side and can stay healthy. And with Sky, Sky's always been, you know, mentally tough kid, and, you know, he's still, he had that knee injury last year too. So, you know, to some degree, just these guys being on the field, staying healthy, and then, you know, making plays when their number's called. And the great thing about both these guys are they're two guys who really like as people, and they're smart guys and they work hard. Now it's just a matter of them putting themselves in position to earn consistent playing time and then make plays when their number's called.
Okay. And, a similar question on Wanya Morris, just what you thought of him when he had to go in and play last year for those four or five games. And what is his readiness maybe to be an every down starting left tackle, if that's what you need him to be this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So I think we were really happy with Wanya's development last year. And I think he showed some signs early on in the OTAs that we were really excited about. Continue that growth and maturation process during the training camp. And then middle of the season there, he got an opportunity, some good, some bad. I think Wanya would tell you this. I think if you look at his body of work last year, I think on one end, you're happy that he was able to come in at the pro level and be competitive. It wasn't perfect, but it also was solid play that I think is a good foundation to build and grow on. But he has to come in here with the mindset that, you know, we're going to look to bring in competition. And, you know, he's got to come in here and win that position. And I think it's his job to come in and be prepared to win that position. And I think it's our job to go out there and find competition, you know, for that left tackle spot. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of promise in there and there's a lot of ability. But certainly I think, you know, it's our job to bring in some competition there and make him earn that and work for that.
And we'll go last to Nate Taylor.
Brett, on the left tackle situation, how much do you prefer, or I guess has the organization, how much do you all prefer position flexibility, having a left tackle who could potentially play right tackle if necessary? And given it's a premium position, I guess how important is it to sort of find that next guy that can obviously play that position for multiple years, given you've had left tackles of different guys over the last couple of years?
Yeah, we put a lot of stock in flexibility. As you mentioned, Nate, you even saw that last game of the year when we played the O-line, coach had those guys playing different positions. You know, Creed played guard and, you know, the tackles swap positions and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, that just, it kind of illustrates exactly what we think of positional flex and in game situations. You never know if it's going to be a right guard, a left guard, a center, a right or left tackle that goes down. So position flexibility does heavily weigh into it. You know, there's a lot of guys that are a lot of O-line coaches would tell you, if you can play tackle, you can potentially play any position across the board. So that, I think that's why tackle is so premium. It, you know, have to protect the quarterback's edge and the blind side, but also typically those tackles are athletic enough to slide inside and sometimes even play center. We saw that with Mitch Morse a few years ago. He was a tackle in college and he ended up being a really good center. So position flexibility is super important to us. And yeah, and you know, it is a quarterback league and you got to protect him and you got to get after him. And those tackle positions are always going to be important because they protect the most important player in your team. So if we get an opportunity to get one of those guys, for sure. I mean, it's always on your mind, just like DN and DT. So again, hopefully the numbers work out and hopefully there's a window of opportunity for us, but I do think there's some really good players in rounds 2 and 3. So just need a little patience and a little luck, I guess.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Veach.
Yeah. That was Brett Veach talking with the media right there. We'll get into a lot of what he said. We'll talk a little of Royals a little later on because I want to talk on and hit on some of what Brett Veach was talking about right there during the presser as they lead up for the NFL draft. We'll take a break. Come back. The Zone, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to The Zone. Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels, no Jason Anderson, Matt Derrick at 11, Mick Schaefer at 1, Julian Edelman and Ladd McConkey around 12:20. We're going to talk about what Brett Veach said very quickly here because I want to talk a lot more with Jack and Matt Derrick about the Chiefs at 11. Obviously, there's a few Royals things that Jack and I were having a lot of fun with in that break right there as well. So we'll get on some Michael Massey thoughts. Some Drew Waters thoughts, some Kyle Isbell thoughts. But first, Brett Veach was talking right there to the media. He had a couple of very interesting nuggets. Again, we'll get in more detail with Matt Derrick at 11. But the most interesting thing he said was the NIL effect. Something that I didn't really consider, which again is why he's a GM and my dumbass is not. The NIL effect in the 4th, 5th, and 6th round. He was talking about how the prospects are older. The prospects are saying, you know what, maybe I will stay in just an extra year and make some money here. Why would I go? And quite frankly, we're not talking about all these guys, but some guys can make just the same amount of money. They can potentially up their draft stock. They can stay a year longer and have fun, maybe try and play for a championship if you're on Georgia, if you're on Alabama, if you're on Ohio State, Washington. Try and make the college football playoffs. These guys are getting older. Mm-hmm. They're staying in college because they're still making money. And if you're not a first round, second round, third round guy, let's say you're a fifth round guy, money's might not be a whole bunch different, obviously over years versus a year. But that's what Brett Veach has found, that guys are staying in the in college longer, so they're coming out older, and then that makes the 4th, 5th, 6th round that drop-off more steep. I thought that was a fascinating little nugget from Brett Veach, one that I didn't necessarily consider. It makes sense because you look at a lot of these guys, we're sitting here going, man, that guy's old. He's 24? Mm-hmm. He's 23? He's 24? And that's the reason for it, the NIL. I thought that was a very fascinating little nugget there from Brett.
There are much more incentives now to stay in college. If it's not even just for, well, let's get one more year of development under your system, you can play at a high level, then you're going to rise in the rankings a little bit. I mean, how old's Bo Nix? Like 25? Yeah. He's going to be older than some of the guys in the league. Remember that stat they always used to put up, like Lamar Jackson was still younger than a handful of rookies that were getting into the league? Because he came out of college at like 21 or, mm-hmm. or 20 or 21. He was incredibly young. Juju Smith-Schuster was another guy, really young coming out of USC. And I think now in college sports, I'm not saying it's taken away the shine on prospects, but you know how we are as, I guess, consumers of football or any sports in general. The older they get, we're like, nah, are they really that much of a prospect? Like when you have a guy that really bursts onto the scene at 21, 22, you go, man, what do you think he could be at 25 or 26 when he's really in the wheelhouse of his prime? Now it's like if you draft Bo Nix, which he's going to be first round, it's like he's 24, 25.
Yeah.
He's going to be 27, 28, nearing 30 a couple years into the league. Like, yeah. He's already past the prospect status.
Well, we saw it with Snead.
Yeah.
Snead was a fourth rounder, wasn't even a rookie, you know, the fifth round, yep. The fifth year contract. So you're sitting here going, he came into the NFL really old. You're looking at that second contract. That was, in my opinion, a big reason why you almost didn't want to give him that longer term second year or second contract, because you're sitting here going, well, look at his age. Mm-hmm. And that's just his first contract post-rookie contract, right? I mean, age has such a big factor on what teams do and don't do. So I just found that pretty interesting from Brett Veach and just kind of getting in the weeds there with the NIL effect. How, yeah, it's great for the players in college, but also makes a draft a little more of a steep drop-off, especially in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round. Brett Veach did say his board has 221 players on it. He knew he was getting asked that question, so he had to go and make sure of how many guys were on his board. 221 players on Brett Veach's board. He did say his guys on the board in round 6-7 that he believes they'll be UDFAs, and that way he can get out ahead and reach out to those dudes. So I thought that was kind of smart, right? Just learning a little the inner workings of how Brett Veach and some of these GMs work. I thought it was, again, just behind the scenes. Maybe no one else finds this interesting, but I do. He goes, typically on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you call checks. Just calling other GMs and other teams to make sure their phone lines work.
I think there's a lot of games that go on the week leading up to the NFL draft. And
oh, yeah.
Brett Veach has to be near the top of that list.
He goes, casual and hypothetical conversations will be happening.
Just checking.
Just checking.
Maybe pulling a prank call or something like that.
I will say, and it is true, know this firsthand when I work with the 76ers, guys will be on, and this is a little different, the draft compared to trade deadline. But I was with the 76ers during the trade deadline. We saw Brian Colangelo because you could see his phone. You could see when he was on the phone and off the phone. Again, Brian Colangelo, if you know anything about him, he didn't last too long with the 76ers. But they're really on the phone line up until the pick, up until the deadline. I mean, they're right then and there. We saw him, and I forget what the trade actually was, but the trade did go down right at the deadline, and we saw him on the phone up until it. So you got to make sure the phone lines work. You got to make sure you're because they will be using them and making casual conversation up until the last possible minute. I just think it's pretty interesting. Petro was asking about the ability to deal with certain teams, right? As far as, you know, you're the champs. Are teams not wanting to trade with you as much? Brett Veach basically said, hey, we can get them to trade, but it comes at a premium. You know you're paying a premium, especially in the AFC and especially with teams like Buffalo, Cincy, and the Ravens. The asking price for those teams specifically, they just get a lot higher.
I think we saw that firsthand with Buffalo, right, and Stephon Diggs. There had to have been no thought whatsoever in trading him to Kansas City. And there are rivalries that are built up in the NFL that you're just never going to want to see your player play in that uniform. I think there's a lot of teams in the league that look at the Chiefs' red uniform and go, I never want one of our stars playing for them. Why would you at this point? You're only giving them more fuel, and everybody's kind of waiting back on their heels thinking, eventually the wheels are going to come off here. We don't want to, you know, repair them. We don't want to give them a Band-Aid. Baltimore did that with Orlando Brown Jr. Yeah. When the Chiefs had offensive line damage. And everybody's like, what the hell is Baltimore doing? Even though they're getting picks back, it's like they needed a left tackle, and you gave them one.
I will say, for Baltimore, there, if you want to use it, they got better.
They did.
It worked out very well for Baltimore. That was one of those win-wins. I do think some teams get so, maybe I'm wrong, but get, you could say, petty, where they're like, I don't want to trade with him. But then all of a sudden you're saying, would that have actually made our team better? Are we trying to focus on hurting them or making us better? What's more important? And Baltimore at that point said, we don't care who we're trading with. We want to make our team better. We know that Orlando Brown Jr. is not going to be here. We know he's not going to be part of our team going forward. What can we do to get the most back? If it's trading with a rival, it's still helping us more. So I think there's a fascinating line you have to toe. Three more quick thoughts before we take a break and come back and talk Royals. Brett Veach was talking about how deep the receiver class was, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone. The O-line is good early and then tails off. I wonder if that means a first-round tackle. I wonder if that means a trade-up to get your tackle in the first round? Again, I'm not talking alt, but even like just in general, those guys who might go in the 20s.
Kingsley.
Suamataia, right? If Suamataia, I have to say it for Jason. Well, Jason says his name all the time, and so I was like, I got to learn, man. If I'm going to talk with Jason, and Jason's gone, so I guess I have to be the Suamataia guy.
You are. It won't be me. Yeah.
So maybe it's Suamataia. We'll find out, but I thought that was a little interesting tidbit of O-line good early, then tails off. If there is going to be a trade-up, that almost leads me to believe it would be for a offensive lineman.
It has to be. I think that's the only position group they would have to trade up on. I thought last year they were in play a little bit for Anton Harrison out of Oklahoma.
I did too.
I thought that was going to be a trade-up scenario. But with this wide receiver group, if nothing happens 20 to 30, they could sit back on their heels. Maybe even go day two with the wide receiver because we saw the draft board fell last year. All those guys went late teens, early 20s. Like, no wide receivers were picked until then, and that pushed back probably a couple of ideas for GMs out there. But if it gets that 30th pick and they haven't taken offensive linemen, they're probably either trading out of day one or they are going to take a wide receiver that's fallen a little bit in day one.
Yeah, because, again, there's guys like Xavier Leggett, Troy Franklin, who knows where he's going to go. He could go if he went first round or second round, I don't think anyone would be surprised. There's a lot of guys in that range of first, second, bordering the third where you go, you know, where are they going to be? And I do think you can trade up into the second if you want to get your guy around the late 40s, early 50s too. So, and then the final little tidbit I thought was good defensive line depth later. So he's still thinking about the defensive line, still trying to get reinforcements. Not surprising, I don't think. I would still like to see a little bit of an investment on the interior defensive line. I know they brought the gang back, right? They brought back the Noddies and the Whartons and the Mike Pinnells. I want to see a little souped-up talent with Chris Jones. I want to see someone who can not just be a solid player in the run game, but a guy who can also get a little push up front and get after the QB.
I think you have a couple of edge rushers, too, that are still... I mean, George Karlaftis has already proven himself to be a very reliable edge rusher. But you have two kind of bulk rushers, I guess you like bull rushers, bulk rushers, strength rushers like Karlaftis and Felix Anudike Uzama, who are going to try to go straight at you, win the one-on-one. I would love to see a late-round pick of an edge rusher that's kind of that raw potential. We saw it with Josh Kando.
B.J. Thompson, baby.
B.J. Thompson. Tano Passan, you know, like kind of, I would love another late-round pick. And even though the success rate hasn't been that high, I still would love to see that dart going on the dartboard of, if it does hit and you get this 6'6", long-armed freak like even O'Menihue was, man, like B.J. Thompson's still incredibly young. We could see him turn into something like that, but that's what I would love to see with the defensive line depth, not some nose tackle that you're grabbing it in round five, round six. I mean, Keandre Coburn last year, I actually thought was going to stay on the team.
Has a city been collectively more wrong? Has the United States collectively been more wrong? I don't remember anyone saying bad pick. Everyone was like, wow, what a steal for Kansas City.
Maybe Darian Kennard the year before. I was convinced Darian Kennard might have been a starter in year one. He dyed his hair red in training camp.
It was the hair dye that got you.
It was the hair dye. And was only on special teams and then was gone.
We'll take a break. Come back talking Royals next with Jack Johnson. The Zone rolls on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to The Zone. Sterling Holmes. That was Shane Summers sprinting in here.
Papers flying everywhere.
Papers flying, reminiscing about when, Jack, you were an intern.
Yes.
Do you have an intern name or
Flake?
Flake. That does not sound good. Either you have dandruff or you would just not show up.
You would think that also. That's because my
Jack
name
Johnson
and the song that I've gotten all of my life. I might have said this to you before. You a fan of Office Space?
It's like Michael Bolton.
Michael Bolton.
Why should I change my name?
He's the ass. Every day of my life.
Banana pancakes would have been a lot better.
That's the worst one I get. Do I like banana pancakes? Can I play the guitar? F-stop blues. All of them. No.
You've not just dove in and...
I was born before he was famous. So it wasn't this direct correlation. But still, people think it is.
I think it is.
You think he's that popular?
I mean, he was for a while, yeah. I mean, Dylan, he's pretty popular, right? Like, everyone knows Jack Johnson.
It's a niche.
Yeah, it's not like Kobe Bryant or anything.
No, it's not like Kobe Bryant, but Jack Johnson in the early...
It's like two of the most common names, but like you have a big net of reasons why that someone might.
Jack and Johnson is a common first and a last name. He's a hockey player. He's a boxer.
I'm just gonna go ahead and throw this out. Sterling's very uncommon, and Patrick Mahomes' daughter. I'm just saying.
Yep. You're very close.
I'm just saying. Yeah, when we talked to Patrick Mahomes, he told me I needed to add a "ma" to my last name.
There you go.
Yeah, pretty close. All right. Talking Royals now. Nick Lofton was optioned to Omaha. Corresponding move is going to be announced today. Yet to see anything that I've looked up, have not seen it yet. We all assume Michael Massey as Michael Massey is returning from his rehab assignment until it's official, but that's the way it's leaning. And then the other interesting news was same game, Drew Waters was pulled. Gavin Cross was pulled, but Gavin Cross was pulled for injury. So that's not as exciting. Drew Waters, though, you and I were talking, and I think was a little fun. Is he coming up to the majors? And if so, who's it for?
If he's coming up for the majors, I would imagine somebody's either banged up and it's somebody in the outfield. You would hope it's not, you know, MJ Melendez, who, even though he's in his cold stretch, he was one of the more productive hitters in the middle of that lineup. I know for a lot of fans, it's Kyle Isbell, right, because they had the battle in spring training. I'll tell you this, if there's no injury and Drew Waters is coming up and either Kyle Isbell's going down or he's going to the bench and Blanco's going to Omaha, that's pretty cutthroat, 19 games through the season. Like the Royals and J.J. Piccolo have raved about Kyle Isbell's defense, and here's another part. The Royals were winning. They're 12-7. This is one thing if they were, you know, 6-13 needing a spark, and it's like, man, Kyle Isbell is unplayable at this point. I don't think he's been unplayable. He's in a bad slump, but I think it's almost this, hey, Drew Waters is really tearing the cover off the ball in Omaha, and we gave Kyle Isbell this chance, and even though it's 20 games, listen, you were one of those players that had to start hot for us to believe that you can be that everyday center fielder. Now, this could also be Waters was pulled, and it could be injury-related. That would be, I think, a small chance because both you and I talked about Massey and Waters were pulled at the exact same time. We feel 99% sure Massey's on his way to Kansas City, probably already here. But if Waters is up here and he's in the lineup tonight and in center field, talk about a different mentality the Royals are going with this year.
I would love it. I'd love it because you want to win now. You're looking at the AL Central. It's not great. You're looking at the team right now. It's time to compete. At some point, you can't keep trotting out a dude with a 525 OPS. Kyle Isbell's career OPS is 642. I love when people talk about, well, if he gets to a 700 OPS, that's a big if. Like people love to say, well, if he gets here, his defense is so good. What has he ever shown with his bat that makes you think he's going to get there? Yeah, I would love it if some guy, I would love it if I don't know, Michael Garcia could bat 290 and hit 20 home runs. Do we think that's going to happen? No. It's a pipe dream. It's a pipe dream, in my opinion, for Kyle Isbell to be a league average bat. He's a great defender. To me, he's a fourth outfielder. But he's not very fast. I know the stolen base numbers aren't bad for him, but he had 7 last year. It's not like he's out here stealing 20, so De'Ron Blanco fits more as your fourth outfielder for that exact reason. Drew Waters is faster. Switch hitter.
More power.
Takes a walk.
Hits the ball harder.
Hits the ball way harder. If you look at Kyle Isbell's baseball savant numbers, holy bleep. It's not like there's bad luck involved here. You're looking at this. That's a lot of dark blue.
Dark blue, light blue, powder blue.
Not good.
Red for defense.
Red for defense. I hope it is. Hey, by the way, Drew Waters is younger. Like, I've been, again, maybe I'm the bad guy to talk about this because I'm a huge Drew Waters supporter from the get-go.
Yeah.
I just never believe in Kyle, so maybe this is me fitting my narrative. But also, at some point, you got to try something. You got to try something different. It's not like Drew Waters is this black hole in center field that's unplayable. He's still a good center fielder. I don't get your thoughts here, but I think it's Drew time.
I think that you look at both these players. Listen, they both need to be league average hitters. They're that good defensively. Be a league average hitter. I think Waters gives you a little bit more upside there. He also has to prove it, though, too. Right? Isbell had to prove he can be an everyday center fielder. Waters has to do the exact same thing if he is, in fact, on his way to Kansas City.
We'll take a break. We're going to come back. We'll be joined by Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest, chiefsdigest.com. We'll talk more about Brett Veach, what he was talking with the media.
We have an adult in the room.
We have an adult in the room! Hide the beers. The zone rolls on.